Blog Talk Radio.
Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson. I'm your host, and with me are my dear friends and co-hosts, Marvin Gowron, Andre Redatus, and Chuck Thurston. Hi, you guys.
Hey, you guys.
Hey, Paula.
There you all are. I sure missed you last week. I had to go to a wedding in Houston. Oh, my gosh. That was a faith step. And, we've been friends with these people for years. They lived next door to us when we lived up in Coal Creek Canyon. And, their son, the one that got married, grew up with May, my daughter. And, May was 6 months old when we picked her up in China. And Thomas, the fellow that got married, was born while we were there. And they lived next door, so those two grew up together, and we were good friends. And so it was like, something we simply had to do, go celebrate that great milestone with that beautiful young man. And it was great, but I sure missed you guys. And,
wow.
I so thoroughly love this group, so there you go. Did you have a great conversation last week?
It was pretty good, but we really missed you, too. In fact, I think it's almost like 3-4 weeks since all four of us have been together, because Andre was gone, and we really missed you, too, Andre. It's interesting. Each person adds something quite unique to the mix.
Dynamic.
And when someone's not there, you really feel the space, you really do sense it.
Yeah.
So we really missed you.
Well, thanks. I missed you guys too. And it was one of those things where you just couldn't avoid it. So
sure.
But I appreciate you always holding down the fort the way you do, and I'm deeply grateful. And
it's
real.
Just a high testosterone show is all. So that's what we had to contend with. there was no female energy to balance.
We were all yelling at each other.
That's great.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Well, you know, here's a shout out for study groups everywhere, because it takes such a commitment, doesn't it? You guys all know this because you have all been deeply involved with that, to make sure that it happens every week, to plan for it, to plan snacks or whatever. You know, most you Rancho Book readers have gone to what we would call traditional study groups, where they go to somebody's home and every week at the same time, and that person, that host, provides the space and often the leadership. And what a beautiful service that is. What an amazing service that is. My hat's off to study group leaders in the Urantia movement, because for me, study group is a sacred, very special time. It's not just study. It's not just intellectual ever. Never has been in any group I've belonged to. I don't know about you guys, but there's always a huge element of spirit, of worship, of reverence, of prayer, of joy and exchange of ideas.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. Well, it's also the relationships.
Yes, yeah. And the relationships, oh my God, yes. Mm-hmm. That go on for, I first met Andre in 1981, I think, at a study group.
Well, it might have been even been 1980 if we met at Jim and Joanne's on East 10th Avenue.
I think we did, actually, so there you go. Because that's where
I started. That was the first study group in December 1980. You know, I had just been in Denver a few days and and had my first study group, and that was
you
wonderful.
You tapped into that.
Jane and John Roper went to that still. They were still there.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Roger Bassett
and
Chris, you know, I think Chris Riggios went to that one too for a while. And
yeah, it was later. He didn't get to Colorado till 82.
Oh, of course, Jim and Linda McNally, they went.
Jim.
Because I used to drive down there with Jim. We'd carpool together, me and Jim. And I had the great blessing of being able to say to him, well, what do they mean when they say that? You know, and he was a good mentor. What were you going to say, Chuck?
Oh, I just wondered if you guys would mind if I read, it's just three paragraphs about the social architects.
Oh, of course. I love that one.
Yes, very, very pertinent to what you guys are talking about in a fun kind of way. So, it won't take, it's just three paragraphs.
Before you read it, briefly explain who they are, in case anybody who's not sure who they are is listening.
Well, within these three paragraphs, they explain.
It does. Okay, cool. Great.
But these are, they're of the order of supervisor seraphim. So this is one example. There are others. There are many, several others. But the social architects, this is in paper 39, section 3, supervisor seraphim, and this starts with paragraph 4. I'm just kind of reflecting on what you guys are talking about as I read this and thinking about my own case, you know, people I've become associated with, particularly in connection with, you know, working with this revelation. So they say that the social architects from the individual planets, which would be like our planet, up through the Marantia training worlds, these seraphim labor to enhance all sincere social contacts and to further the social evolution of universe creatures. These are the angels who seek to divest the associations of intelligent beings of all artificiality while endeavoring to facilitate the interassociation of will creatures on a basis of real self-understanding and genuine mutual appreciation. Social architects do everything within their province and power to bring together suitable individuals that they may constitute efficient and agreeable working groups on Earth. And sometimes such groups have found themselves reassociated on the national worlds for continued fruitful service. Isn't that an interesting thought?
I love it.
But not always do these, But not always do these seraphim attain their ends. Not always are they able to bring together those who would form the most ideal group to achieve a given purpose or to accomplish a certain task. Under these conditions, they must utilize the best of the material available. And then this paragraph's the kicker. Says, these angels continue their ministry on the mansion worlds and higher Barantia worlds. They are concerned with any undertaking having to do with progress on the Barantia worlds and which concerns three or more persons. Two beings are regarded as operating on the mating, complemental, or partnership basis. But when three or more are grouped for service, they constitute a social problem and therefore fall within the jurisdiction of the social architects. These efficient seraphim are organized in 70 divisions on Edentia, and these divisions minister on the 70 Marantia progress worlds encircling the headquarters sphere. So I like this idea that, you know, the angels are keeping an eye on this, we know, but that this is also something they, you know, take very seriously, is arranging, I assume, in some way, social interactions, meetings, connections, maybe some near misses sometimes, who knows, right. But between people to try, they must have some ability to sense which, you get these people together, I wonder what would happen. You know, they can see there's a potential for dynamic compatibility of some kind. So it's fascinating to think that they have some involvement in the outcomes of our, social life, even on this
Isn't
earth.
It fascinating to think about how much and how many different groups of angels are involved in our career, our ascendant career?
Yeah.
It's astounding.
How many different ones? It's astounding. How many angels?
Go ahead, Paul. No. Finish your thought. I was going to. I just appreciate your talking about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's
very Chippendale right
three
now.
Or more.
I thought the same thing. No, but I insist.
I just I'm glad you brought these three paragraphs up, Chuck, and they're very relevant to what we were talking about study groups. And one thing that struck me that I'd never caught before was in the very first paragraph where it said, these are the angels who seek to divest the associations of intelligent beings of all artificiality while endeavoring to facilitate the interassociation of will creatures on a basis of real self-understanding and genuine mutual appreciation. And actually, when you read that, I was actually still thinking of the study group conversation and that study groups, I think, compared to something like church, I was struck by the artificiality and just dropping. This is the spontaneity of them and the informality of them and the,
intimacy
you have enough
structure.
Yeah, intimacy, you have enough structure so that something coherent and happens and moves in a direction. But otherwise, it's very fluid and very spontaneous and natural, not artificial, not sort of imposed structure. So anyways, it really kind of struck me. But I love all three paragraphs, and I think it's very, very helpful that you brought them up in
well, those last two conditions in paragraph one, I think, are especially interesting, too, where they say on a basis of real self-understanding and genuine mutual appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
So this divesting of artificiality has to do with understanding yourself.
And appreciating others.
Yeah, right.
Isn't that amazing?
It's sort of like you can't have one without the other.
Right. And Jesus said that too, right? You can't have one without the other. You can't you know, love your neighbor more than you care for yourself. You know, they're mutually dependent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 But this real
self-understanding.
Something. Yeah. Sure.
Go ahead, Chuck. I interrupted.
Self-understanding kind of brings in the psychological dimension.
Right.
In an interesting way. Yeah.
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 Anyway.
Yeah, so Paula, go ahead. You were going to say something about the different orders of angels.
I've prayed to them many times and knowingly known who I was talking to. You know, ask them for their help. And sometimes, you know, I think obviously you know, when you're talking to the angels, your guardians maybe hear it and then pass it on to a specific group that might be able to more help you with that. Mm. But before we came on the air today, I was telling Chuck and Andre about my friend Mike Gibbons. And Mike Gibbons, I'm almost certain, walked into my life because of a prayer I said to the angels that I'd be willing to help. And I asked them how I could help. And the minute I asked them how I could help, I thought immediately, oh, I know. I'm pretty good at cheering people up. So if you know somebody who needs to be cheered up, send them to me. And the minute I said that, we're talking about, Andre was talking about making a commitment. And the minute I said that, I knew they were going to take me up on it. And I felt the gravity of that. It was like, you know, it talks about the down grasp. I felt that. It was like, okay, just remember you said it. And the very next day, literally, this Vietnam vet walked in my video store. I had a video store, and he could barely walk. He was in his 50s, but he looked 80. And he asked me if he could join my video club, and I told him, I said, well, you know what? I have a coupon out there for a free membership. And here he was walking on a cane. And I said, there's some up at the King Supers up the way. And he started walking out, hobbling out with his cane. And I said, wait a minute, come back. I own this store. I can give you a free membership if I want. And that's what I'm going to do. You are a member of my store, my friend. And we started to talk. And it began a long relationship with this man who was so broken by his experience in Vietnam. He was literally held in a prison of war camp for 4 years in a cage that would be, you know, maybe 4x4 in the middle of the jungle. And while he was there, his wife had him declared dead and married another man. Both of his parents died. He learned all of this on a plane on the way back home. And, you know, it was just such an honor to hear his story. And I was so grateful that I said that prayer, because I really feel like they brought him to me. Mm. And you know, the lesson, though, also for me is it could be anybody, anytime. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you do, you know, has an impact on other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the social architects, yeah. I think, are good at what they do. And I've come to trust them, you know. A lot of times, you know, I think they bring people into your life that challenge you. And they make you better. It's just interesting. It really is, to contemplate the work the angels do. And how thorough they are and how good they are. They have to be good at what they do, you know, because they depend on us. We're the hearts and the hands and the feet and the human beings. We're the material level that makes what they're doing a reality. We complete their efforts because we have hands and hearts and ears and eyes, and we can actually do ministry on the material level for them, with them. We're all important to them.
Mm.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying there about how we have...
Mm. What?
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, but, So, yeah, I was just going to sort of reinforce what you're saying. I like what you're saying there about how we have contact with the physical level
yes.
of reality on this planet. You know,
we're
where
the
rubber meets
the road.
Our hands
yeah.
touch the stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
our
we
ears
do
listen.
The doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do all the doing on the physical
right.
level.
Right.
I mean, we've got all these celestial personalities with us, helping us, trying to reach us. But they can't ordinarily. I mean, they can make contact with physical reality. They really need to sometimes. But generally speaking, this is our planet, and we have to make the things happen that happen. So I think that's a very interesting kind of relationship that we have with the seraphim. You know, our
yeah.
unseen friends, sometimes we call them.
Our unseen friends. And imagine, prior to the Urantia book, we knew angels existed, but we didn't have a clue about what they do and how
mm-hmm.
efficient and functional and highly organized they are. And when you do know that, you can really be specific. You know? You can really be specific in knowing who you're asking for help or knowing
mm-hmm.
who you're making promises to and what they're able to do. So
mm-hmm.
we're getting a note. Isidore on the board said that there's a squealing noise in the background, so it may be the hearing aid. I'm just not sure, so.
Well, I can. I'll go ahead and block, see if it makes a difference.
Well, or sometimes, Marvin, I think you just make an adjustment, so.
Yeah, let me know if it's disappeared. Are you guys hearing it,
okay.
too?
Okay. I hear
it. I
was
hearing it a little bit earlier.
I'll stay blocked unless I'm speaking, and then if it's still going on, then it's not me.
Okay. Thanks, Marvin.
Okay.
So.
What you remind me of with what you were talking about, it comes up from time to time, and it's that wonderful quote by the great Scottish explorer William Hutchison Murray that everybody attributes to Goethe, and it's this: until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness concerning all acts of initiative and creation. There is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too.
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. And his kicker, whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now.
Wow, I love that, Andre.
Yeah, that's great.
I'll put it in the chat.
Okay, awesome.
Well, it reminds me of what they say about our adjusters' attempts to work with us are greatly dependent on our determination. You know, they use that word a couple of times, at least, in the adjuster papers, that it's our determination mm-hmm. to do something, whatever it is. That sort of guarantees an outcome that they can foresee. And that allows them to then, you know, work with that flow.
There you go.
That's maintained by determination. In the absence mm-hmm. of determination, then we, you know, just skitter from one thing to another.
Would you
say
that then is determination is really will? Your will to
is
do
what?
It is your
will.
Will. Your
yeah,
will.
Well, it's like strength of will, I guess, maybe, in a
yeah.
sense. But it's also
yeah.
focus and visualization of outcome, I think, to some extent.
Yeah.
You have a goal.
Yeah.
You know, you have a clear enough goal in mind, at least, that you can know what to do next to make progress toward that goal.
Yeah.
And then undertake that with, you know, energy and enthusiasm and all the rest.
Commitment. You know,
it's
not
yeah.
enough to just be desirous to do
yeah.
something. You have to
right.
be committed to it. And even if you fail, and that's always a possibility, clearly on this planet, it's always a possibility that you will fail, that you'll give your life,
yeah.
your whole heart and soul to something, and it won't work out. We see it
yeah.
happen with marriages all the time, right? And, you
mm.
know,
mm.
we should never make light of how hard that is. Because
yeah.
I think most
yeah.
people go into that with all the hope and commitment of the world. But, you know, and when it doesn't work out, that's a bitter disappointment, you know. But it's like that with jobs. It's
mm-hmm.
like that with so many
mm-hmm.
things. But we still have to commit and give it our all.
Yeah.
And even if it doesn't work out, at least we can say,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, we gave it our best shot. You know, and
something
yeah.
well,
is learned from those failures,
that.
Too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I remember when David Kanner was on the Spirit of Truth, you know, and Derek
uh-huh.
interviewed David Kanner for the Spirit of Truth podcast. One of the things he brought up I thought was really interesting was how it's so easy to come up with multiple plans. You know, oh, well, I really want to do
yeah.
this, and I want to do this, and I want to do this. And it's like part of the challenge is, okay, how do you narrow down? How do you narrow your focus to where you can actually make progress with even one of them? You know,
right.
That's something that, you know, he's had to cope with. Was
I think
and
politicians,
I too.
They make that mistake
yeah.
too a lot because they finally have their chance now to do something important and something valuable, and they try to do too much and nothing is – they don't get much done because they're trying to do too much.
Yeah,
it's
well,
better to pick something.
On who they've architected to help
yeah,
them
right.
do. But in the individual case, we have our minds are very fruitful, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You know, we've been given this wonderful gift of mind and imagination that goes with it, which enables us to have visions of possibility. You know, wow, I could do that. Or I could do that. You know, and somehow, as we get older, maybe, we learn enough about ourselves. This idea of real, you know, self-understanding can help us to focus and direct our determination so that we do actually bear some fruit during this life.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just an interesting learning about mind and spirit and our own innate abilities, too. Try to bring the most out of what we've been given. You know, the most
right.
valuable and unique thing that any person can offer to this world is what they should probably be focusing on. But managing your life to the point where you can actually do that is another issue, you know, that we all, you know, struggle with to one degree or another.
So
there's a lot of other
things
you sort of have to do.
Yeah. That quote was so lovely, Andre. Would you say that the
really
main
was.
Thing, yeah, the main thing, and you too, Chuck, and Marvin too. Marvin, by the way, the sound did go away, but please jump in any time you want to say something. The reason that we don't, we're rich on ideas, but we fall short with commitment is maybe our tendency to be slothful. Do you think that has something to do with it? That once we realize, oh, this is going to be work. This is going to take
sure
a lot more
true.
Effort. I didn't realize
well, you know,
this was going to be
such
hard work.
In the screen papers, right off the top, they talk about completion of decisions.
Yeah.
And I remember the first
yeah.
time I read that phrase, it was like major light bulbs went off. Like
major
completion of decisions. Oh yeah, I've made a lot of decisions that I haven't quite completed yet. You know, which is another way of talking about this.
Right.
So
exactly. Well, I have to, you know, what you said, Chuck, reminded me of these words of wisdom from Rodin. This is from paper 160, section 4, paragraph 11. He says, ability is that which you inherit, while skill is what you acquire. Life is not real to one who cannot do some one thing well, expertly. Skill is one of the real sources of the satisfaction of living. Ability implies the gift of foresight, far-seeing vision. Be not deceived by the tempting rewards of dishonest achievement. Be willing to toil for the later returns inherent in honest endeavor. The wise man is able to distinguish between means and ends. Otherwise, sometimes over-planning for the future defeats its own high purpose. As a pleasure seeker, you should aim always to be a producer as well as a consumer. Is that not relevant in today's world? I mean, you know, I know the Midwayers chose these wonderful teachings to put into the Jesus Papers, but that paper by, you know, from Rodin is really extraordinary. So,
one more little tidbit along these same lines. This is a quote I just discovered recently. When I was preparing quotes for, you know, podcasts we did, and I thought this was so interesting. This is in paper 69, section 2, paragraph 6, where they say that the Sangik tribes were fairly industrious when residing away from the tropics. But there was a long, long struggle between the lazy devotees of magic and the apostles of work, those who exercise foresight. So that connection between foresight and work is very,
and planning,
very compelling.
Yeah.
Compared to what they call the lazy devotees of magic, where you just like hope for stuff, wish for stuff to happen. Maybe it will, because
someone's going to come and fix it for us.
Yeah, right.
We don't have to fix it ourselves.
If you have actual foresight, if you can envision a future possibility, then you realize you have to work for it.
Right.
And that motivates the kind of thing we're talking about here. You know, that came up in that quote that Andre read, you know, about making that kind, that quality of decision to actually accomplish something.
Yeah.
Is
boldness of
rooted
that.
In foresight. So I thought that was a really interesting connection they're making there.
Rooted in foresight, the ability to plan for the future.
Yeah.
Marvin, I hear you,
and
Marvin.
And to work for it.
Yes, right. To sacrifice now for future benefit.
Well, and to make positive efforts.
Yeah, exactly.
Constructive efforts.
Yeah.
I've been listening in the background, just really enjoying the conversation, so it's fine. I think I heard a little bit of squeaky returning while I was muted, so there may be some other source, what an amazing conversation, and the passage from Goethe that you shared, Andre, was amazing, and then your thoughts as well, everyone's. It's just, I think, a very significant conversation.
Yeah, maybe timely, huh? Because we're coming up on. Oh, and Andre just posted that on the board. Thank you, Andre. We're coming up on the Transcendentalers. And this is section 8 of the paper we're reading, which is paper 31, The Core of the Finality. And I know you guys had a great group last week. You talked about the glorified midway creatures. These are all members of the core, right? The evangels of light. And now we're to the Transcendentalers. And you guys that are, you know, especially Andre is a numbers guy, correct me if I'm wrong, but the vast majority of one core of the finality is human ascenders, right, like us. And then there's like a seasoning of these other beings in there. And we're talking about the social architects. Certainly they have something to do with this, wouldn't you think?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah,
well, they function on the Marantia level, but there's certainly some divine and perfect place finding that occurs in the core of the finality, not the least of which would be our own choices as well. I wonder how much a core of the finality is self-selected and how much it is composed from the outside by those that are, you know, in Grand Fonda's grand core of leading the core of the finality. It's really, in all cases, even the thought adjusters, while they volunteer in the hundred or hundreds, for any particular mortal based on their own self-assessment, their own pre-personal assessment of their suitability to indwell, they are still selected from by a personalized adjuster who makes the ultimate determination, or perhaps more than one personalized adjuster. But they, you know, if that happens even on Divinington among God fragments, then you can imagine that similar things happen with us. We may certainly volunteer and want to be part of certain core, but those with greater wisdom may ultimately make some tweaking of how we're composed in our ultimate core. And part of what we were discussing the other day was the idea that, you know, we're literally married to the town. We're married to 999 other people. Well, 998 for now. You know,
married
for
the town, is that?
it's essentially you're married to everyone in the town. Yeah. A town of 999. And you go wherever your core goes, you go. And you have a say, but everyone has a say. And who knows how we make choices of where and how to serve, because we can't even imagine what the nature of our service really is at that point. It's going to be very interesting to see what evolves in our service.
I think part of what we talked about last time was that, it's such a long assignment out in the other six super universes that, so in the sense of family, in the sense of, you know, co-working together is going to go on for like eons. Of getting to know each other and working together and developing family relationship. And so it's really, quite a remarkable phenomenon and a very special relationship we will have with the others in whatever core we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They offer an interesting hint about that in the introductory section to this paper, actually. The ninth paragraph of section zero, they say that the core is organized in accordance with the working associations of the worlds of space.
Yeah.
And in keeping with the associative experience acquired throughout the long and eventful ascendant career. So that's just kind of a hint, but it suggests that our working associations through our whole period, you know, through that whole long period of ascension in the worlds of space, as they put it, maybe form the basis for the organization and selection process. Mm-hmm. May not entirely define it, but that's just naturally going to be a part of it, because these are the people we've worked with before. So it's only natural that there's value in that experience of working together, and that would be somehow maintained and carried forward in these finality companies or cores.
Well, and imagine that they tell us that on Paradise, understanding is complete. So I can't help but think about how they interact. And especially if they are married to each other going forward, the stability that creates, the total complete understanding that creates,
mm-hmm.
The lack of conflict.
Yeah.
you know, which there wouldn't be, I guess. There wouldn't be any conflict in such a group.
I don't know. There can be all kinds of disagreements. Even the two authors of this paper disagree about the evangels of light.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's an interesting
thought. I don't know. With finalities, though, it might be different. You might be right. There would be a divine harmony, maybe just it's inherent in being so closely, you know, fused with the fragment of God.
Well, and to have traveled that far, to have journeyed that far, doesn't it say, isn't there somewhere that it says on Paradise, communication isn't as essential because understanding is complete?
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that? Am I remembering that falsely?
Yeah,
huh?
harmony is speech of Avona is how that,
right,
that ends.
Right.
There's no possibility of disharmony in Havona. But even that is guided by a certain group of, I believe, tertiary Supernophim who help to facilitate that, who make sure that nothing like that can ever happen with us that are, you know, only third, fourth, or fifth stage spirits. But still, you know, it just doesn't happened at that level.
Confusion. Difference doesn't necessarily mean disharmony. That paragraph I was just reading,
right,
that third paragraph, that ninth paragraph in the opening section, it ends by saying, where in the middle it says, all the ascended creatures admitted to this core are received in equality, but this exalted equality in no way abrogates individuality or destroys personal identity. We can immediately discern in communicating with the finaliter, whether he's an ascended mortal, a Avona native, adopted seraph, a midway creature, material son. But in any case, the fact that we maintain our individuality and uniqueness and, you know, our uniqueness of our individual point of view, that suggests all kinds of differences, but that doesn't necessarily mean disharmony. So
well,
that's
right, and maybe that's what they, that diversity.
I think there's a general principle here that, you know, is important, even on this world now, realizing we can have differences without having disharmony.
I love that, because, you know, if
we
each bring a uniqueness that actually is what creates harmony, right? That's what creates it. If we were all singing the same note. Yeah. So, you know, and Perry made a comment on the board that, you know, she said there have to be representatives from each super universe.
Yes,
that's
but
an interesting.
Not in your core. Not in your core. Otherwise there would be conflict in trying to achieve, you know, experience in all the other six super universes before you return to your own super universe. That would not work logically, because if you had somebody from another super universe in your core of finality, in your particular group of 1,000, then they would be going early before they had finished. So in the core of the finality, it's happening that way. What Perry might be alluding to is the fact that in every trinitized group of the trinitized sons of attainment, right? Or is it attainment or selection? Attainment.
I think it's attainment.
You know, the mighty messengers, the ones, those high in authority, and those without name and number, those ones all have equal numbers that are in their trinitized groups. And then they get, you know, sent in equal numbers, but probably in diverse arrays out to the super universe capitals to serve. It's easy to get that mixed up, because, you know, they're telling us that about the Trinitized groups, seventh stage spirits. And for us, we're still incomplete. We still have to get more experience. And there's no way that it's going to happen correctly if we don't, you know, it'll in your core, everybody will be from the seventh super universe. I also hold to the opinion, it may be wrong, but I hold to the opinion that it may be that everybody in your particular core, in consonance with Chuck's point about those with whom you have gone forward to serve and learn from, well, you've learned from those people all the way up from your local universe.
Yeah,
it may be that it's going to be important for you to get all kinds of other experience elsewhere, even when you can return to your super universe, to get all kinds of experience in other local universes before you return to your local universe. Why? Well, it's my opinion based on one quote in paper 188 that we will, just before going to the outer space levels, come back to be with Michael of Nebadon and go and follow him into the outer space levels. But
wow,
that's just my opinion.
Well, good thinking, though. Great food for thought. Okay,
did you comment
that go ahead, Chuck, and then I'll read section 8.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, they do comment. I was going to say they do comment that the finaliters are a wholly self-governing body, that they choose their own leaders and directors. No, I'm reading from paragraph 12 of that introductory section. They say that no outside influence can ever be brought to bear upon their policies, and their oath of allegiance is only to the Paradise Trinity.
Yeah,
well, that's pretty interesting.
They're working for the top bosses, in other words.
Yeah, right.
They answer to the top.
refer directly to the Paradise Trinity.
Right. That's about as high up a boss as you can go in the organization of things. Okay, well, here's a section on the Transcendentalers, and that's a coined word. There's no definition for that one online, but
really?
This is section 8.
Although
they
make an interesting comment about coined words and Transcendentalers. I think it's in this section. Go ahead, Paula. If we come to it, I'll note it.
Okay,
really
you'll point it out. Okay, all right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Part of the perfected mortal's experience on paradise as a finaliter consists in the effort to achieve comprehension of the nature and function of more than 1,000 groups of the transcendental super citizens of paradise, eventuated beings of absonite attributes. In their association with these super personalities, the ascendant finaliters receive great assistance from the helpful guidance of numerous orders of transcendental ministers who are assigned to the task of introducing the evolved finaliters to their new paradise brethren. The entire order of the transcendentalers live in the west of paradise in the vast area which they exclusively occupy. In the discussion of transcendentalers, we are restricted not only by the limitations of human comprehension, but also by the terms of the mandate governing these disclosures concerning the personalities of paradise. These beings are in no way connected with the mortal ascent to Havona. The vast host of the paradise transcendentalers have nothing whatever to do with the affairs of either Havona or the seven super universes, being concerned only with the super administration of the affairs of the master universe. You, being a creature, can conceive of a creator, but you can hardly comprehend that there exists an enormous and diversified aggregation of intelligent beings who are neither creators nor creatures. These transcendentalers create no beings. Neither were they ever created. In speaking of their origin, in order to avoid using a new term, an arbitrary and meaningless designation, we deem it best to say that transcendentalers simply eventuate. The Deity Absolute may well have been concerned in their origin and may be implicated in their destiny, but these unique beings are not now dominated by the Deity Absolute. They are subject to God the Ultimate, and their present paradise sojourn is in every way Trinity supervised and directed. Although all mortals who attain paradise frequently fraternize with the transcendentalers, as they do with the paradise citizens, it develops that man's first serious contact with a transcendentaler occurs on that eventful occasion when, as a member of a new finaliter group, the mortal ascender stands in the finaliter receiving circle as the Trinity Oath of Eternity is administered by the chief of transcendentalers, the presiding head of the architects of the master universe. Wow, that is one intriguing section. So I can't wait to hear what you guys think about that. What, you know, who are these guys?
Yeah. So they've always existed. They never have not existed. They have never been created. Neither do they create. I mean, you can't repeat that often enough and still not see the jello trying to escape the mold of your thinking. You know, it's just doesn't compute in a finite mind exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
The idea that, wait a minute, so you're saying these beings have existed as long as God has existed eternally? Uh-huh. Yeah. And still somehow they are subordinate to God, and somehow they are causally related to God. God's primacy is somehow involved in their, not creation,
beingness,
in their eventuation.
Their eventuation, yeah.
But that eventuation never happened in time.
Ah.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, as my teachers used to say in elementary school.
And that gives you many long hours of contemplation. They eventuate. And so what comes to me in this, and thank you, Andre, because that really did a great synopsis, is that maybe they're like thought adjusters in some ways. You know, they are a part of God. They eventuated in the reality of the Creator, with the Creator, not unlike the Trinity, maybe. I don't know. I mean, you know, they tell us these same things about the Trinity, too. You know, you'd like to think about it as a beginning in time. That's the way your mind works. You want to think about when they began, but they didn't. They always just were.
Yeah. Well, here's another way of thinking about it. Another way of thinking about it is God having done in eternity what God did to differentiate into the eternal sun and paradise, and then in the presence of paradise for the eternal sun and the Father to have trinitized the infinite spirit with the consequence that the infinite spirit instantly brought into being in Havona in eternity. Okay, there's that whole thing. And that the three absolutes of potential, the deity absolute, the unqualified absolute, and the universal absolute, all of those together and all of the relationships between them eventuated the triunities and the trioddities. And those triunities and trioddities themselves probably have something to do with the consequent eventuation of the master architects and the transcendentalers.
Okay.
That because they exist, it was inevitable for these other beings to come into being just as a result of the reality that was before them. If you can say before them, that's again a time-space distortion of the reality of the transcendentalers. You know, they always have existed. God always has existed. The triunities and trioddities have always existed. Still, there are causal relationships. There
right.
are those things
right.
that even in eternity relationships can be looked at as having primacy, even as the Father is primal to the Son, and the Father and the Son are antecedent to the infinite spirit, and so on.
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know if I could. I'm sorry, go ahead, Paula.
No, Marvin, go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know if I can articulate this clearly, but when I think about the three universe ages, right, the age of the supreme, which is what we are part of, the age of the ultimate, and then the age of the absolute, they bear a relationship to all beings in each of those ages bear a relationship to God, and that relationship is fundamentally different in the degree to which we share God and God's nature. Down here, we are created, it strikes me, as entirely separate from God, but then having God in God's intimacy indwelling us. We're still getting that squeaking, aren't we, now, when I join? Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it.
No, don't.
We just have to
yeah.
live with it.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Those
not bad.
Wonderful things that facilitate your hearing, they eventuate in squeakiness.
And they facilitate your participation. Hooray!
Yes.
Yeah.
They eventuate in your participation, too.
Yeah,
and it's for me a transcendental experience for sure.
There you go.
Bravo.
We have arrived.
Yeah, but so what I get from this is that the transcendentalers are more of God than we are, and that is all by design and purposeful.
Mm.
And so, in a sense, we have a beginning and we have no end. We were created, but we are designed to go on in association with the Thought Adjuster into eternity and have an endless future and become more and more like God. But we start from a place of being almost entirely unlike God. And that the transcendentalers, being part of the age of the ultimate, begin somewhere in the middle where they are already of God in a certain sense, but they have evolution processes to move through as well, and experiential, because they say the age of the ultimate is experiential as well. So they start in the middle somehow in this three-part cycle, and they're more, they partake more of God's nature. And so I think the eventuate part of this is being more godlike. They actually always existed with God, but somehow they had a separate existence that began never but is a separate existence from God and a partial existence. And they are also on some level evolving, but not finitely. Now, I don't know if that's, it's not very articulate.
Yeah, well, you're,
no, it is. It's very
touching on.
Thank you.
Some of the mysteries here. You're touching on some of the mysteries about all of this. I'm noticing in that section, I don't think they ever describe them as being existential, meaning past eternal. Maybe they are, but this idea of eventuation to me feels more like emergence. But I could be misunderstanding it. It's so interesting how they sort of admitting here in the middle of paragraph three, they're this, you know, how they're struggling to work with language, where they say that, and speaking of their origin, in order to avoid using a new term, you know, which they obviously do in some cases, an arbitrary and meaningless designation, we deem it best to say that transcendental or simply eventuate. So, you know, the meaning that we bring to that word is being expanded by the revelation, obviously, as we attempt to comprehend what they're talking about. But I think that's so interesting. Something else I noticed, particularly in paragraph one and two, is their repeated use of super, you know, as a prefix. So in the first paragraph, they say, they refer to them as super citizens. Super citizens of paradise. And then they describe
super personalities.
Super personalities. And then in the second paragraph, is the last sentence, they say that they're concerned only with the super administration of the affairs of the master universe. So I don't know what to take from that exactly, but it's sort of like what nowadays we might call a meta level involvement, where they encompass or they see the whole, and that puts them in a, you know, when you think about the Urantia book where it uses the word super, that's a kind of a clue also.
Right. It's above. It's above the ordinary.
Yeah. Like superhuman, for example. Yeah.
Right. And they would make, that would make them natural, maybe leaders and administrators. They're just natural that way, you know, and so their presence on the core probably provides the leadership for such a super group of beings, you know. They're the super of the super, really, the natural leader. That's what I'm inclined to believe, that if they, and especially the last paragraph that says they administer the oath, that tells me, okay, they're the lead, essentially the head of that core. But I could be, you know, you pointed out, Chuck, that they elect, each core elects their and manages themselves. So, but I want to share a quote that came to me while we were talking about eventuation. Because I think it's interesting, and I don't really know why this one came to mind, except that I think it's an illustration of that phenomenon on a material level, and maybe a physical level. This is from paper 12, section 9, paragraph 3. Mathematics.
I was just going to say, Paul, it seems like that passage eventuated for you.
It is. That's true. It was always there.
You don't know why it came about, but it just sort of happened.
It just sort of happened. It bubbled up.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so this is 12.9.3, paper 12, section 9, paragraph 3. Mathematics, material science, is indispensable to the intelligent discussion of the material aspects of the universe. But such knowledge is not necessarily a part of the higher realization of truth or of the personal appreciation of spiritual realities, not only in the realms of life, but even in the world of physical energy. The sum of two or more things is very often something more than or something different from the predictable additive consequences of such unions. The entire science of mathematics, the whole domain of philosophy, the highest physics or chemistry could not predict or know that the union of two gaseous hydrogen atoms with one gaseous oxygen atom would result in a new and qualitatively super additive substance, liquid water. The understanding knowledge of this one physiochemical phenomenon should have prevented the development of a materialistic philosophy and a mechanistic cosmology. Now, that came to mind. Did liquid water eventuate? And was it, obviously, it's one of the key factors that sustains all physical life. And nothing could have predicted what they're saying. You could not predict or know that the union of two gaseous hydrogen atoms with one gaseous oxygen atom would result in a new and qualitatively super additive substance, liquid water. What a miracle.
Well, that's more like, it's an outcome of a chemical reaction. I don't know
right.
if that qualifies it as eventuating.
Well,
but
when
the same
you,
thing
when
happens
you with, add, it's mm-hmm. the super additive part of it that strikes me. You
the
know, when you add,
yeah.
When you add certain things together, and perhaps, I mean, I could be totally off base here, but perhaps the spiritual world is like that as well. When certain things happen, realities come into existence.
Yeah.
They were always there in potential, but certain super additive things had to happen to make them pop up. I don't know how else to describe it.
You're right to bring it up in the context of eventuation because they use a term and this is not a coined term. This is a perfectly good English term that is being used for a very unusual kind of eventuation, something that prior to this probably did not enter the mind of mortal mankind. You know, the idea of the eventuation of beings
right.
that were never
right.
created. You know, that was not a human concept. I think every Urantia book reader that first comes across that goes, huh.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. You know?
Eventuation.
But
yet it makes
but
sense.
But eventuation is a perfectly good
about it.
English word, which means, you know, happens or happens in consequence or, you know, has the connotation of happens in consequence or whatever. But the idea of their saying there really does harken back to this whole idea of the transcendentalists. Why? Because the master architects are behind the whole construction of the dual form of matter. The dual form of matter and energy that we encounter is only in that form because the wisdom and the design of the architects of the master universe declared it to be so. There is a design to the matter and energy that we have out in the universe. And that is the stage on which the creator sons and creative spirits are functioning on. They can't function with matter other than that, because that matter is what has been essentially designed and decreed by those eventuated beings. So there's a little bit of eventuation shot through all of what you're talking about. It's quite apropos.
That's what occurred to me. All right, you know.
There's another.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, I was just going to say another possible example is just occurring to me as you guys have been talking, thinking about, you know, Jesse and his work, his theater work. As this last film he did as a writer and director, the process that, you know, you got a team of people together, actors and others, And it wasn't like written out. It was like they met over a series of weekends with a storyline, but then all the actors sort of created their own character.
It wasn't scripted, in other words, huh?
It wasn't scripted, right. It kind of emerged as they tried to be themselves and these characters in the story, in a, coherent way. But the actual, how things are said, how they act, all of that would kind of came up from within each individual. So it was this kind of interesting, kind of experimental way to create theater. It's a little bit like improv, if you've ever seen improv comedy, how that works.
Yeah.
But one of the things they talk about, is sort of establishing this meta level that only emerges as they work on it, right? There's a unifying aspect or quality or defining level of meaning maybe that could be thought perhaps of as something that eventuates because it's real. It's real, but it wasn't created as such. It kind of emerges as a result of the process. So I don't know. That seems like it might be related, but I was just looking online here about, the use of the word meta as a super, kind of like a super perspective on things. The sort of the popular understanding of meta that we have now. And that only emerged in the 1970s. I mean, as a prefix, meta has been around forever, like metaphysics, that use of the term goes way, way, way back. But the use of the term in the current popular sense only emerged in the 1970s. So, it's not surprising that it's not found in the book. Another word like that is synergy, which I researched a bit for that little article I wrote for the last publication. Anyway, synergy is another very important concept that I think is related to all of this, and that was not in current use. Was also not in current use at the time the book was written. So the word they used instead was superadditive. So that they use like, maybe three times in the book. And they also talk about, the whole being greater than the sum of the parts. Or if you have, a synergistic relationship, it creates something that's more than the sum of the parts. Or like you're saying about a marriage or a relationship, there's always that third entity, which is the relationship. Kind of like the conjoint actor, in a sense, in the Trinity. And that entity, however you want to think about it, emerges as a result of process. It's not created as such. So I'm wondering if that's maybe kind of touching a little bit on what they mean in terms of, experiences that we're familiar with.
Yeah. Another quote came to mind as you guys were talking, and this one, this is from paper 22, and it's the one about, I'll just read it. It's 22.75. If two mortal finaliters, on going before the architects of the master universe, demonstrate that they have independently chosen an identical concept for trinitization, the architects are empowered on their own discretion to promulgate mandates permitting these glorified mortal ascenders to extend their recess and to remove themselves for a time to the trinitizing sector of the Paradise Citizens. At the end of this assigned retreat, if they report that they have singly and jointly elected to make the paradisical effort to spiritualize, idealize, and actualize a selected and original concept, which has not theretofore been trinitized, then does Master Spirit Number 7 issue orders authorizing such an extraordinary undertaking. Would you say that original concept perhaps eventuated because of these two beings that came together to create it?
Let me see if I can share something helpful, and it's really in response to your question, Paula. because, you know, getting our arms wrapped around this stuff is like trying to grab something that's from another dimension almost.
Yeah, truly.
But I was, I was looking up, and I think everything that we've been talking about is very related, like what you showed about the emergence of water, that what I take away from all of this is that somehow something emerges out of a ground of being that is not perceivable or is in another dimension, and it comes into our dimension. And one of the thoughts that occurred, it comes into our reality, and we speak
right.
about it. But in a sense, it always existed in another level of reality, but we see it come into our own, and so we think of it, and our reality has origins. Things begin. You know, but in this other dimension of reality, things always were, and yet can have an origination point. So the definite, you know, I was just looking around for definitions of the word eventuate. And there's one other thing that connects to this for me, and that is where they say that paradise is the nucleus of every automaton. In other words, all of material reality somehow has as its origination point paradise, which always existed, and that's very related to the water quote you shared. But when you look up the definition of eventuate, there's a lot of different ones, but part of the definition is occur as a result. When something eventuates, it occurs as a result of something. And the example is you never know what might eventuate, and what you share, Chuck, about, you know, the without a script, something emerges out of sort of somewhere, and you can't get in touch with where it emerges out of. It's somewhere in a different dimension or a different reality. And so some of the synonyms are for eventuate are something that happens or occurs or takes place. Arises, emerges, appears, crops up, surfaces. Those are synonyms, which are really, really interesting synonyms. And then the last thought that for me is connected to this is in paragraph 3 of the section we read, right after they introduced the term eventuate, they say that deity absolute may well have been concerned in their origin. And go figure that they speak of a transcendentalist origin when they say it didn't have a beginning. So there's a bit of a paradox there, right?
Well, they say they're not created. I don't know if they say they don't have a beginning exactly.
Yeah, so there's a subtlety.
Maybe that's a fine point.
Yeah. I thought they say somewhere that they don't have a beginning. They've always, on some level, they've always existed.
They say that about existential realities, but I'm not sure if they exactly say that here. And even that in that third paragraph, they also again speak of their origin. They say, in speaking of their origin, in order to avoid using a new term, we deem it best to say that, you know, they eventually.
Right.
But saying they're not created means that a being didn't create them, you know, like the seraphim are created, but they're not created in that sense. But it doesn't necessarily mean they don't have an origin.
Well, that's, I guess, what I'm getting at.
The origin in time.
Well, but it's,
with the additive thing, when you add two things together and something eventuates, you know, that's, I don't know. It's a difficult concept.
Well,
what's happening there?
It's tricky because there's also the aspect of this super thing. Like when you mix hydrogen and oxygen, you get water, but the water is kind of on the same level of reality as the hydrogen and the oxygen. You know, it's a product of a chemical reaction, but it's not on a super level. It just mingles with the air. You know what I mean? Water can mix with hydrogen and oxygen. It's on the same level of reality, whereas this eventuation thing, or these transcendental, just the idea of being transcendental, that also suggests being on a higher level, a higher perspective.
Right. It's transcending.
Somehow on a super level.
Right.
So that's just another aspect to it. But it's interesting that those go together, that there's this emergence process, but then that yields a type of being that's on a super level, you know, that's concerned only with the super administration of the affairs of the master universe. I mean, what could that mean, the super administration? That's more like the overall container or the overall, you know, origin, history, destiny, all perceived simultaneously kind of perspective, maybe. Something like that.
Huh. Yeah.
I'm just guessing, but super administration is like managing the influences that manage what actually happens. You know what I mean? It's like, again, it's sort of like operating on a meta level. That's, you know, I was just looking up, even the word metacognition didn't come in popular use until the 1970s, and that's like thinking about thinking. You know, what do you think about your thoughts, or how do you feel about your feelings? Right? It's like taking a higher perspective on something that we can easily get caught up in the middle of.
Right.
But lifting our perspective or our consciousness above just being completely entangled in the moment and sort of looking down on it from above. You know, from a super perspective, then, oh, okay, maybe, you know, I don't know. But the reason I keep coming back to the meta thing is because it does point to this sort of super level, a higher level perspective, which seems to be part of what's involved with these beings as being transcendental,
right,
or involved with the super administration of affairs.
So let me ask you guys this. Is one of these beings in the core?
Well, they don't actually say that they are.
They don't actually say that, do they?
No.
No, I don't think so.
They're not.
They're
not in the mortal
system. Okay.
Yeah, but there is a core of transcendental finaliters. So there is an entire core that is made up of transcendentalists.
So they're telling us about this being, the transcendentaler, because they work for us when we're in the core. They obviously are over us in some way, and because they administer this oath, do you think? Is that why they're telling us about the transcendentalers?
Well, they're telling us about the transcendentalers partly because they have revealed reality up to the level of the master universe, something that has never been revealed up to this time. The idea that, you know, we're seeing the outer space levels. We have no idea that this is concerned with the development of realities that transcend the finite, and that this is what they're having to reveal now, is that there is a vast retinue of beings that exist on that level that never were created and do not function as creators.
And because we will meet them and know them.
Well, yeah, I think.
And we will meet them and know them in paradise, yes.
Right, right.
I think at
Go
the beginning
ahead,
of the section. Yeah, I think at the beginning of the section, there's this sentence, the first sentence, part of the perfected mortal's experience on paradise as a finaliter consists in the effort to achieve comprehension of the nature and function of more than 1,000 groups of the transcendental super citizens of paradise, eventuated beings of absentite attributes. So the sense is that once we become finaliters, and in addition, you know, before we go out to the outer, the six other super universes, part of what we're there to do is to begin to be introduced to absentite realities and
mm-hmm.
transcendental realities in anticipation of our going out to the age of the ultimate, to the outer space level, and that we experience these finaliters, and so they're beginning to tell us something about them.
Yeah, and that, in that paragraph, they say that they help us a lot. In other words, that's what I'm getting. They're really instrumental to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Thank you, you guys. That all really helps understand the role that they're playing.
I mean, whenever we get into the whole, like, absonite, ultimate, eventuate, you know, that whole conceptual realm, it always feels like, at least for myself, it's like I'm sort of hitting the ceiling, you know, or kind of reaching this fuzzy boundary of my capacity to comprehend.
What did Andre say? The jello is slipping out of its mold. Whoops, there it goes.
But I like that feeling, though. I like that feeling. It's a feeling being challenged.
Yeah.
So
trying to wrap your head around a concept that you've never really experienced before, and the Urantia book is
so
good.
It's not
going to
come
up
anywhere else.
No. It's not going to come up anywhere else.
But it's
you
part
couldn't
of
even
the
conceive
of
it.
Reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, that's a great segue.
Here we go. The Architects of the Master Universe.
Should we read that, you guys? I mean, we have 30 minutes.
That.
Yeah.
Let me just make one comment to Chuck, and that was with regard to, well, we don't know about this not beginning in time. Let's just go back to the foreword to Section 1, Paragraph 12. The absonite level of reality is characterized by things and beings without beginnings or endings, and by the transcendence of time and space. Absoniters are not created. They are eventuated. They simply are. The deity level of ultimacy connotes a function in relation to absonite realities. No matter in what part of the master universe, whenever time and space are transcended, such an absonite phenomenon is an act of the ultimacy of deity.
Mm. Well, that makes a lot more sense.
Where is that? Where are you reading from?
The foreword.
Yeah, I know. But
I'll put it in the chat. It's Section 1, Paragraph 12.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's all familiar language as you read it. Yeah, I remember. But yeah, well, that's interesting because in the where we're reading now, they speak of their origin. So somehow or other, those all of that has to be harmoniously or conceptually compatible.
So how do you
without beginnings or endings?
Yeah.
It doesn't say they're past eternal, though. No, it doesn't say they're past eternal, but they transcend time and space without a beginning in time.
Yeah.
That you know.
right.
Can we agree that we don't fully comprehend this?
Well, that's what I'm. What I was trying to say is. Can you guys hear me, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. How do you get your arms around a being who has an origin but was never created?
Yeah.
Because that's what they're saying, those two things in a couple of places. It has, a transcendental or has an origin. It began somehow. He, she, it began somehow. But was never created. So the only correlated idea is for me is the idea of the thought adjusters. The thought adjusters being fragments of the Father, and I don't think ever that they say that the thought adjuster was created, but it was fragmented.
Exclusively
at some level, it was separated out from the presence of the Father and segregated in some fashion, and yet is still at one with the Father. So somehow I think this is related as well. Somehow the Transcendentalers are, I think, are of God in a way that we don't really understand, and so have always been, and yet have originated somehow as separate beings. But go figure trying to really understand that.
Yeah. There seems to be an inevitability about them. It's like they're an inevitable result or something that emerges inevitably from process or relationship or the dynamics of, you know, these higher levels of reality. So interesting, the language here in the foreword. They simply are. Okay.
They simply are, yeah. Well, and thought adjusters simply are, too. I mean, we have to think that.
Yeah, no, that's a good, it's an interesting comparison. They, you know, they're fragments, they say, literal fragments of the Vata.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, they're not created.
Well,
yeah,
you know.
They're not created. Yeah, they're not created, but in some sense, do they have an origin? Or have they always been? And so, you know, in a sense, they always have been, but at a certain point, they came out and became, in some sense, separate from the Father in an undifferentiated sense.
That's the way I understand
it. Fragmentized.
Yeah, and that to me has some parallels to this issue of the Transcendentalers' nature. Somehow, they have always existed, but at a certain point, they became separated and became a distinct being,
it definitely.
Yeah. What do you think?
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I just want to point out that Perry on the board said they talk of origins only to appease our need for sequentiality, and that's true. I get that, and it's very, very difficult for us to conceive of anything that exists outside of time and space. We just can't grasp the ramifications of that.
Well,
because we exist in time and space.
Yeah.
You know,
so,
we have an origin.
They're teasing us. They're giving us tidbits for future engagement and involvement at a point where we can begin to deal with these realities. And they say that we're not going to really encounter them directly as such necessarily up until we hit paradise, and we are actually getting to know these beings and understanding many of these things that to us now are shrouded quite utterly in mystery in certain sense.
Right.
So they're giving us tidbits, I think, to engage us and introduce us to the possibility is the feeling I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just wondering what you guys think they mean by transcendence. And they say whenever time and space are transcended, such an absentite phenomenon, you know, it's an act of the ultimacy of deity, no matter what part of the master universe. So I wonder if we have any of that capacity to transcend time and space, or what that even means, to transcend time and space.
Well,
we
will function as absentite beings in the core of the finality. We will have transcended our finite nature by virtue of having mastered the finite. And there are absentite aspects to who we are, that's part of the reason we can actually interface is that with the Transcendentalers, is because we will actually start growing as, you know, the absentite aspects of our being will start growing. They probably have been growing. They say we can start to, that even on the Marantia level, certain of the absentite dimensions of personality that were dormant begin to be experienced, and probably even more so on the spirit level. We still don't know what that means, except that we start to be able to transcend time and space in some way.
Well, and the conjecture
wouldn't pretend to know what
possible.
That means.
Yeah, the possible conjecture is, you know, these transcendentalists are of the age of the ultimate. They're of some future yet to be realized reality. And so we're seeing, and we can only sense them partially, I think, in their real nature. And then at a certain point when we cross over the threshold from the age of the supreme to the age of the ultimate, there are lots of hints that our fundamental nature will change. And then we may be able to understand and grasp, because of that transformation, much more of who the transcendentalists
right.
are, is some of what is helpful for me in trying to approach all this.
And I did look up transcendent, and the definition, which always helps, I think, even though this is not a 1930s dictionary, beyond or above the range of normal or merely physical human experience, surpassing the ordinary, exceptional, and as relates to God, existing apart from and not subject to the limitations of the material universe. So those are the understandings that we commonly have, I think, in the word. And Perry made this point also on the board. She said, of course, we have the capacity for transcendence because we are indwelt. And that's true. We do. I mean, maybe a lot of what they tell us, they know, well, you may not be able to get this right up front, but there's one who lives within you who can and will get it.
Right,
you know?
Right, our testers.
Yeah, and you will be conversant with that in time. So, you know, it's true. They may be giving us this all for future foundations, a future understanding.
By the way, on the sound problem, have you guys been hearing squeaking? Yeah. I've been muted, so the squeaking is coming from some other place as well, but just
okay.
by the way.
Okay. Yeah. Good. I'm glad you told us that, so we'll maybe get a sense of where that's coming from. It
Here's
isn't bugging me.
Here's an interesting example.
But...
Yeah, I don't know. Well, one of the definitions of transcend, they give an example where they say that kindness transcends courtesy.
Wow.
So that
okay.
implies a value level.
Yeah, on a value level. Beyond or above the range of normal or merely physical human experience. Yeah. Maybe every spiritual reality that we cherish, maybe all the fruits of the Spirit are transcendental. They do transcend the normal animal behaviors, right? They're super and above those things. Well, do we have time to read Architects of the Master Universe?
Yes, we do. Let's read it.
Let's
come back to it.
And discuss it. Okay, I'm down with that.
Okay.
Because
I'm down with that, too. Thanks for using that colloquial term from a generation that's subsequent to ours. Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
I love
I'm down
those guys,
with that, too.
You know?
Yeah.
They've taught me a lot, as
yeah.
all children do teach their parents a lot.
Right.
So do you want to read that, Andre? Yeah.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Architects of the Master Universe. The Architects of the Master Universe are the governing core of the Paradise Transcendentalers. This governing core numbers 28,011 personalities, possessing master minds, superb spirits, and supernal absinites. The presiding officer of this magnificent group, the senior master architect, is the coordinating head of all paradise intelligences below the level of deity.
Wow.
The 16th proscription of the mandate authorizing these narratives says, if deemed wise, the existence of the architects of the master universe and their associates may be disclosed, but their origin, nature, and destiny may not be fully revealed. We may, however, inform you that these master architects exist in seven levels of the absinite. These seven groups are classified as follows. 1, the paradise level. Only the senior or first eventuated architect functions on this highest level of the absinthe. This ultimate personality, neither creator nor creature, eventuated in the dawn of eternity and now functions as the exquisite coordinator of paradise and its 21 worlds of associated activities. Two, the Havona level. The second architect eventuation yielded three master planners and absinthe administrators, and they have always been devoted to the coordination of the 1 billion perfect spheres of the central universe. Paradise tradition asserts that these three architects, with the counsel of the pre-eventuated senior architect, contributed to the planning of Havona, but we really do not know. Three, the superuniverse level. By the way, were I pausing to allow for comprehension, we would have silence for at least the last 20 minutes of the show. Three, the superuniverse level. The third absinthe level embraces the seven master architects of the seven superuniverses, who now as a group spend about equal time in the company of the seven master spirits on paradise and with the seven supreme executives on the seven special worlds of the infinite spirit. They are the super coordinators of the grand universe. Four, the primary space level. This group numbers 70 architects, and we conjecture that they are concerned with the ultimate plans for the first universe of outer space, now mobilizing beyond the borders of the present seven super universes. Five, the secondary space level. This fifth core of architects numbers 490. And again, we conjecture that they must be concerned with the second universe of outer space, where already our physicists have detected definite energy mobilizations. Six, the tertiary space level. The sixth group of master architects numbers 3,430, and we likewise infer that they may be occupied with the gigantic plans for the third universe of outer space. Seven, the Quartan space level. This, the final and largest core, numbers 24,010 master architects. And if our former conjectures are valid, it must be related to the fourth and last of the ever-increasing sized universes of outer space. These seven groups of master architects total 28,011 universe planners. On paradise, there is a tradition that far back in eternity, there was attempted the eventuation of the 28,012th master architect. But this being failed to absonitize, experiencing personality seizure by the universal absolute. It is possible that the ascending series of the master architects attained the limit of absonity in the 28,011th architect, and that the 28,012th attempt encountered the mathematical level of the presence of the absolute. In other words, at the 28,012th eventuation level, the quality of absonity equivalated to the level of the universal and attained the value of the absolute. In their functional organization, the three supervising architects of Havona act as associate assistants to the solitary paradise architect. The seven architects of the superuniverses act as coordinates of the three superuniverses, three supervisors, of Havona, the 70 planners of the universes of the primary outer space level are at present serving as associate assistants to the seven architects of the seven superuniverses. The architects of the master universe have at their disposal numerous groups of assistants and helpers, including two vast orders of force organizers the primary eventuated, and the associate transcendental. These master force organizers are not to be confused with the power directors who are germane to the grand universe. All beings produced by the union of the children of time and eternity, such as the trinitized offspring of the finaliters and the paradise citizens, become wards of the master architects. But all other creatures or entities revealed as functioning in the present organized universes only, did I say of, but of all other creatures or entities revealed? Yeah, that's what I missed. But of all other creatures or entities revealed as functioning in the present organized universes, only solitary messengers and inspired Trinity spirits maintain any organic association with the transcendentalers and the architects of the master universe. The master architects contribute technical approval of the assignment of the creator sons to their space sites for the organization of the local universes. There is a very close association between the master architects and the paradise creator sons. And while this relationship is unrevealed, you have been informed of the association of the architects and the grand universe supreme creators in the relationship of the first experiential trinity. These two groups, together with the evolving and experiential supreme being, constitute the trinity ultimate of transcendental values and master universe meanings.
How deep it goes.
Well,
yeah. Well, there's a lot there.
Yeah, there is a whole lot there. And we have 13 minutes left in this show. And also I should add that next weekend is Jesus' birthday, August the 21st, and many Urantia Book readers are going to be going to celebrations and attending other meaningful gatherings. So I don't think we'll probably have a Cosmic Citizen next week. We'll have to wait till the week after. To accommodate those various things that are going on. Just wanted to throw that out there so that our listeners know that. We'll probably take next week off so we can go and have and play on Jesus' birthday.
Plenty of things online. Urantia Foundation, the Urantia Book Fellowship, and Urantia Association International are having a joint celebration that starts at noon Israel time, so about 3 in the morning Mountain time, and we'll go run for a number of hours with various programs in between after the prayer time in the beginning, and then getting to a time that is a little more amenable for people in the Western Hemisphere. But that is happening, and you can find out more about that on, there'll be announcements that'll be put out in various quarters with the
various
Zoom
websites.
Link and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be
so
there,
I just wanted to get that in there.
Where those of you in the Pacific time zone, 2 in the morning, get up and be there for noon solar time at 2:42 in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yay. Well, you know, and happy Jesus' birthday to all of you Urantians out there. We're so blessed to have that third holiday. We have Easter and Christmas, but we also get Jesus' birthday, which even biblical scholars admit they don't know when it is. So, you know, the Urantia Book gives us such a plausible explanation of it, and of course we all hold it dearly. So, so the master architects, I never, fully appreciated until just now, their involvement in everything.
Yeah.
And You know, they really blew my mind though when they went on, when they launched on the 28,012th. That paragraph just totally blew my mind. I think I short circuited right there. It's like, holy mackerel, what are they saying here? You have to give that a lot of thought, and maybe, you know, I'll never understand it.
Well, there was attempt at the eventuation indicates that there was will involved. Well, they can't reveal that. The 16th prescription says they can't reveal what is there, but we can certainly speculate, you know, was this one of the triunities that was involved in eventuating these, you know, and the triunities all involve the Father in association with either a person of deity or an absolute of deity in some combination. And what would have been involved in eventuating, and that, you know, it's the idea of eventuating sort of happening is one thing passively, but this verb attempted, well, that would indicate that there was effort, that there was a plan behind it on the level of the absolute or somehow, you know, if that was happening. Because nothing can eventuate in the transcendent realm of the ultimate and the absolute without it having some kind of origin in the absolute, it would seem. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting how they kind of speculate through this whole thing, you know, through this whole section. So, yeah.
Uh-huh. The relationship of the master architects to the creator son is very interesting, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the last paragraph, they say that the master architects contribute technical approval of the assignment of the creator sons to their space sites for the organization of the local universes. And there's a very close association between the master architects and the paradise creator sons. It was interesting. We, you know, Derek gets a lot of calls, you know, being on the fellowship, you know, phone answering person. And we got a really interesting call a couple of weeks ago from someone who wanted to know, you know, we know that Michael brings the patterns from paradise that, you know, are manifest by the universe mother spirit or in partnership. But the question was, well, do these patterns come from Havona or do they come from paradise? So, okay. So I decided to look into that. And coming out of that little bit of research into the book, I discovered two exceptions to Michael being the source of pattern or using Havona as a pattern, you know, bringing patterns from Havona. You know, they talk about there's examples of all types of beings that are later emerged in the seven super universe. So these two exceptions of pattern coming from Havona, one is the mobilization of space energies. And in paper 32, in the introductory section, paragraph 4, they say that the sons of God may choose the realms of their creator activities, but these material creations were originally projected and planned by the paradise architects of the master universe. And then they go on to say that the actual manipulations of space force are the work of the paradise master force organizers. Okay, so that's one sort of mentioning or exception. But the one that's even more interesting, I think, has to do with life patterns. So at the beginning of the life carrier paper, in the first paragraph, they say that life does not originate spontaneously. Life is constructed according to plans formulated by the, in parenthesis, unrevealed architects of being. It appears in the inhabited planets, on the inhabited planets, either by direct importation or as a result of the operations of life carriers. So Michael's involved in choosing life designs, but the actual origination of life, the the wise of planning, but how do they put it? Life is constructed according to plans formulated by the unrevealed architects of being. So only mention in the whole book of these architects of being, which I think is fascinating. And I'm wondering if they're in the same order of being that we just read about, or if they're yet another type of architect.
No, they were
not specifically mentioned in.
I think your supposition is well founded. It would be kind of ridiculous for them to use the word architects where they're using architects of the master universe and not also be hearkening to a reference to the transcendental level again. Mm-hmm. That makes sense that they would use that term, because think about architects of being. Is that any less complex than architects of the master universe? I don't think so. You know?
Yeah. Even more so, in a way.
How beings go together? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how they're put together to begin with.
Yeah.
Well, that brought up another quote for me, to my mind. This is one that I really have always loved, and it's from Paper 42, Section 1, Paragraph 4. It says, subsequent to even still greater progress and further discoveries, after Urantia has advanced immeasurably in comparison with present knowledge, though you should gain control of the energy revolutions of the electrical units of matter to the extent of modifying their physical manifestations, even after all such possible progress, forever will scientists be powerless to create one atom of matter or to originate one flash of energy or ever to add to matter that which we call life.
Yeah. That indicates a clear boundary that would likely be hearkening back to, beyond here be dragons level of the Absinthe. These are all things that originate really well beyond our level of reality, and they're certainly outside, not to mention that they're outside of the control of anybody that would be human to be able to harness that.
Right. So architects of being, yay. Right on.
Unrevealed.
Yeah.
They're unrevealed, but they tell us about it.
They're unrevealed, but they're disclosed. They're disclosed.
Right.
They're
right.
Disclosed. Ah. Right.
So they let us speculate about who these people are. And we can just imagine that if they're unrevealed now, but disclosed, that perhaps in a subsequent revelation, they will be more fully revealed when we achieve that level of philosophic thought, probably in time for the magisterial sun bestowal, or maybe all the way into the teacher sun age. Who knows? Someday we'll learn more about them. For us, we'll learn much more about them just in the next few lives, probably.
And our world will learn much more from these teachings in the next 1,000 years. And in a way, when you look at the depth of them, it's such a compliment to us and the direction that we're headed in.
Yeah.
And, it's so hopeful that they believe in us enough to give us this. It's really extraordinary. So we're blessed. Mm-hmm. We're blessed to have them be able to, to ruminate on it as we do. What an honor it is, and what a pleasure it is to do it with the three of you. I so cherish it. Thank you.
Well, we're down to our last 30. How time flies when you're in the realm of transcended time. Goodness.
Isadora says, what a romance. What an adventure. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Isn't it, though? thanks to all of our listeners. We love seeing you guys every week. We love being here for you. We love being together. It gives us a great excuse. And happy birthday, Jesus, next week to all of you. Have a wonderful celebrated time. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. And we'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll continue on with this amazing study. We'll have time to ruminate about the section we just read. So we'll be able to discuss. Until then, my friends, have a
bye
great
for
week.
Now.
Bye for now.
All right.
Love you all.
Love you
love
too.
You. Love you guys. 2 weeks then. 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Great.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.